try your best just to make it quick. Pour my tin to the sink. Cause there must be something she can do. This heart is broken in two.
Ah, Gregory Isaacs. He passed away on this day, and we went come back with his music, Night Nurse, one of my favorites. Good to have at least the sound alive with us. I want to remind you on our way back to a conversation here on The Mark Steiner Show that The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. And remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can log on to steinershow.org and click on their banner. All the information is there. MeQ, MECU, Baltimore's credit union. So we begin our series of conversations here in the second hour of the Mark Steiner Show. We start off with one of our new print partners here in Baltimore, which is not, they're not new. They've been around a long time, so have we. The City Paper, and about the Analog Drug Act. And once again, Van Smith joins us, who is a senior staff writer for the City Paper, wrote this week's feature, Hysteria in Maryland Across the Country, the Federal Designer Drug Crackdown Takes Prisoners, Cash, and Legal Backlash. And Van, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
So all this kind of talk about legalization of marijuana and battles around the drug wars, I mean, I think very few of us were aware that there was this analog drug war going on.
Yeah, well, I guess it's been going on for a long time since the act was passed in 1986.
But, who knew? I mean, really, people do not know about this.
Well, I think a lot of people do, but maybe it's just not you and I. I'm learning about it, very publicly by writing about it. But
talk about this. I mean, you start the article off talking about Dev Bahadur Hamal, arrested at his tobacco shop in Bel Air. So talk a bit about the story, how it unfolds.
Well, he wasn't actually arrested. He was just a guy who was working behind the counter at a smoke shop in Bel Air, and there was an undercover operation to buy some banned substance called spice, that people like to call spice, that simulates the effects of marijuana, which there's been a lot of different chemicals put out in the marketplace to try to get around the Analog Act. And before regulators can deem them illegal, they are sold over the counter, and people get high with them, and thinking that, it's a legal high. And it is legal for that window of time when it's before it's banned. And so shop owners need to, they would constantly be having new products that would allow them to sell it legally until it became illegal, and it was just a game of cat and mouse over these chemicals. So,
but talk about what the effects of this is. I mean, I think that when you talk about these kind of federal statutes out on these analogs, that some are now on the Controlled Substance Act itself, what's the effect of these laws on people's lives and you think the effect of the law in general?
Well, I mean, these smoke shop owners and the people that and the companies that supply them with stuff are taking risks because they obviously know that there's this Analog Act, and they're trying to sell compounds within a window of legal opportunity and make legal money off of it. And it's risky because they know that they're operating on the edge of the law. And last summer, the summer of 2012, the DEA did this nationwide crackdown, and a lot of people were charged, and many people had just had their assets taken, but were not charged criminally. The feds would seize their assets, bank accounts, cars, whatever, homes, and then file forfeiture proceedings so that the government could keep those assets. And that sets up a legal battle. If you want to, if your stuff's been taken, you could file a claim in the forfeiture proceeding and start making your motions. And some of the wealthier people who were taken down, whose assets were taken during the Operation Logjam, have been mounting legal challenges that basically say this law is very confusing and people don't know whether they're on the wrong side of the law or not and can't reasonably be expected to understand that their conduct is illegal until after they've been busted or had their assets taken. And therefore, we should see this law as unconstitutional. That argument has gotten nowhere. But it continues to be made, and there's been one judge in Wisconsin that that took a look at a situation involving a smoke shop there in which authorities came to the shop and took about $100,000 of some spice-like stuff and for testing. And the guy's like, sure, you can take it. And they kept it. At that point, the substance that they detected in his spice was not illegal. And so he wanted his stuff back.
Uh-huh.
And while the litigation was... And so there was a hearing, and, there, you know, chemists... Various chemists said, chemically, you can't really say that these substances are all that similar necessarily to banned substances. But, you know, the DEA would say otherwise, and you would have this battle. And the judge was like, this stuff is not chemically similar. And he was inclined to return the guy's property. And then in the middle of the proceeding, the DEA banned the substance that was found in this guy's spice. And therefore, the judge could not return it to him because now it's illegal. And he just said, you know, this is unfair. It's like you take the guy's stuff, you hold on to it until you decide it's going to be illegal. And that is not fair. That's the first time that a federal judge has offered that kind of opinion in court over the way that the Analog Act is enforced. And I think it's given some defense attorneys some hope that there's movement in the judiciary towards seeing this law as confusing and possibly unfair, unconstitutionally unfair and vague. So, and there also has been some indications that the DEA itself is confused about how to apply the law and whether to deem whether a substance should be deemed illegal because it's substantially similar to a already banned substance.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecution, the criminal prosecutions, have sometimes been confused. There was one in Maryland involving a guy who seemed to have a rather large-scale operation in Newmarket out near Frederick. And he was charged, and the case just sat there for like a year, and then they dismissed those charges, and they filed new ones for misbranding products. And then that was an indictment, and that sat around for like another year until all of it was dismissed. And the government really didn't do anything with this prosecution. They just sat there, and the defense attorney was like, come on, come on, come on. Speedy trial. We got to have a trial. And ultimately, it was all dismissed, and then the guy had a lot of his assets taken, and he sued to have it returned, and he won that, too.
Huh.
All in the context of the prosecutor's office, really not saying or doing much at all. And there's no explanation for why publicly made, but it appears that there may have been some confusion about how the law should be applied to the situation of this guy's conduct. So I think the law has led to some problems on both ends.
What about things like this, as you're speaking about a little bit, the mens rea and what that legal principle means? How does that fit into this?
Yeah, that means guilty mind. So if you're, say, a smoke shop owner and you have purchased a substance from a supplier that they've been told you is legal, then you're selling it without any sense that it's illegal. And then you get busted, and it's like, oh, it was legal as far as I knew. You don't have a guilty mind when you're selling it, you know, because you are assured and you believe that it is legal. And this law has been, the way that they list these substances, and they're constantly adding new substances to the list as they discover them and deem them to be substantially similar to already banned substances. Some of the people that sell this stuff can't be expected to keep up with all these changes, and so they're relying on the assurances of their suppliers, and their suppliers are relying on what they believe to be the correct interpretation of the law. At least that's what they say. And they have every reason to take advantage of any window they can find to sell this stuff legally, because they apparently make a lot of money. I mean, one guy in Florida who's mounting a strong legal challenge had, you know, $18 million taken out of his bank account.
$18 million. I mean, I know these substances are really popular with young people, especially people in middle school and younger, and high school kids. These are very spicy. Those things are like their alternative. They think it's legal.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, you know, since these substances are not intended for human consumption, they haven't really been
tested
for their effects on humans. And so I think it's very risky to take them. And there have been a lot of horror stories about suicides and violent behavior that that people who have used them have engaged in. So there's no question it's a public health problem. I guess the question is whether the law that's being used to combat that problem is being fairly applied.
So very quickly before we end, Van, what drove you to this story? What grabbed you by this? How this happened for you?
I had written a number of stories about some of the players in this big story that came out this week. The Dragon's Den is a smoke shop in Fells Point, and they got busted. Its owner got busted in a Virginia conspiracy over bath salts, which is these are a class of substances that mimic the effects of stimulants. And it appears that they then, after he was charged, that the shop participated with the DEA in an operation to try and go up the chain and go after the supplier, which was this company in California, MNC. And so I'd written several articles about all of this, and I didn't really, before the Dragon's Den case, I didn't really have any understanding of spice or bath salts or any of this stuff. But as I started following it, and started seeing these legal, this legal backlash emerging among attorneys representing people who've been cracked down upon, it seemed like, maybe this isn't such a simple, obviously there's a problem, but maybe this law is flawed in its application or in its design in the way it's being used now. And that seemed like a worthy topic to pursue, since so many arguments are being made around the country saying so.
And it is. And I think that's one of the things that we love about what you do at the City Paper and the kind of investigative reporting that goes on there. It's really in-depth, and I think we're lucky to have a journalist town that actually does this kind of investigative reporting on a very regular basis. So check this out this week in the City Paper, along with stories by Rafael Alvarez on Scum Skilpati, which is a really good story. Rafael is a great writer, and pretty humorous piece on city power rankings and an interesting piece on Habitat for Humanity, homeless that we don't think about, and they're kind of looking at that and more. All this coming up, and of course, all the news about what's happening about town is all there. So, Van Smith, thank you so much.
Nice talking with you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Always, man. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
So pick up the City Paper, folks. We're going to take a brief break, and as we go to this break, we're going to be listening to Gregory Isaacs, number one. Rest in peace, Gregory. Today he died. We're going to be sharing his music with us during the course of the rest of the show. Come back with Dietrich Muhammad. Don't go away.